This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Yesterday for me, not that you asked, but I appreciate your caring, was a sick day where I just did not pay any attention to anything. My fantasy team suffered. My work suffered on that front. Because, like, I was just not...
I'm sorry to hear this.
I canceled on you. I canceled on Matthew Collar. And then today came around, and he calls. You know, we did our thing this morning, and like, oh, wow. I missed a lot. Waivers and everything, I missed a lot. And so I also, I'm embarrassed to admit, not even really aware. Well, Shakir missing practice yesterday, I did not know about until today.
Okay.
And I also am really excited to know what Sal thinks about all this Davante Adams stuff, because... He might think he's been talking about it nonstop for a couple of days. I don't know, but I am in the dark. But before we get to that, Sal Capaccio joins us on the Western Hotline. Let's talk about the current Bills and the injury news today, Sal, which was not all good.
No, good to talk to you guys. There was some encouragement today. Deion Dawkins returned, which was good. He was limited. He had a hamstring injury, did not practice yesterday. He did say afterwards that, remember, we had talked about actually yesterday, I think maybe Monday, I don't know, when I was on with you guys, I think I joined you and I said,
You were on with me yesterday, yeah.
Yes. Did we talk Monday, though? Was Mike there and didn't we talk Monday?
Yeah, we did. Yes, we did.
All right, so anyway, the point is, if you remember Monday, I think it was, and yesterday with you, Bulldog, I talked about how Deion kept coming out like of the game after every series and was getting his hamstring looked at. But he never left the game for an injury purpose. Well, he missed yesterday with the hamstring injury, but he was back today. And he said today that on the first series, that first fourth down, that's when he injured it and it was very painful, but that he played the rest of the way through it. He's thought about not playing. So that would give you a little insight and context into kind of how everything happened here with him. But he was back today and he was limited. Also today, Ed Oliver, when we were out there during the media viewing portion, was getting worked on by trainers on his left hamstring. At least his lower leg. I couldn't tell it was a hamstring at the time. His left lower leg, or leg, I should say. And I kept just watching and watching. But he did actually go back in and do positional work with the defensive tackles while we were out there. And then we left. And then at the end of the day, he was listed as limited on the injury report with a hamstring. So just something to monitor. I don't know if anything happened after that, after we left. But he was getting worked on while we were out there. And then he did do positional work and went back in. Looked like everything was just kind of normal after that from my vantage point. But obviously something to monitor going forward. As far as what wasn't good today, still no more Khalil Shakir. Still no more Austin Johnson. Today, Taylor Rapp in concussion protocol, and obviously Shakir is with the ankle, Johnson's with the oblique. Really good news, though, Terrell Bernard still progressing, and Taron Johnson on the field again today. I'm pretty sure Terrell Bernard's trending towards playing the way it seems. I think it's very much up in the air if Taron Johnson plays.
Yeah, we talked about this yesterday, and I said this earlier. That's exactly where I'm at. Like, I feel like Johnson is following the Bernard path from last week. Right, yep. I'm here. I'm doing some stuff, red non-contact, just sort of getting the feel for it. But it's really notable that he's not doing anything to risk getting that arm hit, even though it's heavily protected.
That is correct. He had today again. I watched him very closely when they did like positional work early on. They do like a circuit where they each have like the defense kind of rotates from one group to the other. You've seen things like that, and there's a ball drill, and then there's a punch out drill. He didn't punch anything out. You know, so he was doing the ball drills, but he was doing nothing with a bag or a person that required any sort of contact, even minimal. That said, he was doing some ball work with his position coach, Scott Booker, and, you know, going and getting a ball, high pointing it, moving around with his arm, and that looked good. You know, he has it all wrapped. I think about, like, the position as well. Like, it's different maybe for a linebacker with a pec, right? Versus maybe a cornerback with a forearm. Sure, you don't want him taking all that contact, but how much contact is he going to make? Now, Taron Johnson's a little different than most nickel corners.
That's right.
He's on the field a lot, and he's very physical. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
You know, but I do wonder about how much, you know, that plays into it, either by saying we can't put him on the field because that's what he does, or, well, it's a position where he's not going to necessarily be put in harm's way as much.
Yeah, I feel like if he were an outside, we were talking about boundary and slot corner and just the verbiage earlier here. If he were a boundary corner, maybe you could get away with it. He could protect himself a little bit, even put him on the side the injury's on, so he's got the sideline to that, whatever, right? But his job, I mean, his value is in how big he plays that position, right? He's the reason the Bills play nickel all the time. Maybe if he weren't here, they would be more of a three linebacker team. Who knows? But his value is how tough he is and how willing to put his body at risk. And, you know, sometimes it goes wrong. So I feel like with his style of play, if he can't get that thing hit, I don't see any way he can get on the field.
No, I see that in what you're saying. And, you know, that's just such a key position, especially because of how they've already had to kind of maneuver around there, right? And how they've had to basically, you know, patch some things up with Cam Lewis playing there. But if you don't have him and Cam has to play there, and if you're without Taylor Rapp, which is a question mark, then what happens there? Cole Bishop obviously would be in line, it looks like, to start. But where's your depth? Are you elevating Lewis Cine? Yesterday we talked, Mike, when you were here, that Lewis Cine was seen working with the linebackers. Does that mean they're preparing him for that Jordan Poyer, you know, dime safety role? And is that, you know, something because Ingram had been playing there? So there's a lot that kind of has to get sorted out about this. We'll find out a lot more tomorrow, pretty early on. I'll have Sean McDermott on the Extra Point show, and he'll tell us or not if anybody has declared out. He certainly doesn't have to at that particular time, but we'll find out, you know, a little bit more.
Lewis Cine, by the way, if you don't know, is the Vikings player who was a first-round pick, last pick of the first round, 2 years ago only, when Elam was picked by the Bills, 2022, and didn't make it at all in Minnesota. So a depth possibility here for the Bills. Potentially good news on Oliver, Sal, right? Like, I hear limited from an injury at practice.
Right.
I sort of tend to assume it happens in practice and then he leaves.
Yep.
But you saw him return.
I did. And what I don't know is, did he leave again, right? I mean, right. I can't tell you that.
Right.
But I agree with you, Mike. Like, if you see that, you're like, oh my God, what happened at practice? I'm here to tell you, I physically saw him getting worked on by trainers, and he was laying down on the turf, on the grass, face down, and they were working on his leg. And that was going on for quite a while. And then he got up and joined the rest of his position group and walked and got right back in drills, by the way. Like, it wasn't like he was standing around. Now, what he did the rest of practice, I'm not sure. But I agree with you that I'm just here to kind of temper any, oh my gosh, going on right now, because I did see him do that.
What happens if Shakir can't go? And you got to be bracing for that with him not practicing here 2 days in a row now. Whatever. Guys can gut things out like Deion Dawkins was talking about already today. But I feel like Shakir, like, if he's compromised, run after the catch and just in and out of cuts and whatever, like, what are we doing here? So if he can't go, what do you think they do with that position? Is Samuel become their slot guy, or is, you know, what do you think will happen?
Well, there's two parts to this. I think there's the roster and then how you go about it on a play-to-play basis. If he's unable to play, you're going to elevate someone, right? I can't see them going into a game with four healthy wide receivers. So the natural two guys that come to mind would be, number one, because he's a slot receiver, KJ Hamler, and then Tyrell Shavers. Now, you could also Jalen Virgil. I'm not really sure how much Amarion Brown has been in the system enough, don't know enough about him to say they would do that yet. So I would look at KJ Hamler first and say, okay, is that an opportunity for him to be elevated and play that slot role? And then you have a guy available. It could be Tyrell Shavers too, because as you just pointed out, you could also move Curtis Samuel to the slot. Really the only other guy healthy that you would probably have consistently there. But let's remember, Dalton Kincaid can play like a slot receiver and be lined up there. Mm-hmm. You can flex James Cook out. You can do a lot of things on a play-to-play basis, but strictly from a wide receiver standpoint, Curtis Samuel would make the most sense. And then I would assume that you'd probably elevate KJ Hamler to make sure that you're, you know, pretty buttoned up in that spot.
By the way, Sal, when you just said the name Tyrell Shavers, in my mind I went, Tyrell Shavers! like that. It was so kind of exciting in the summer there, and then he was released anyway, and I'd forgotten about his being on the team. So,
yep.
Okay. Back to the Bills on defense here. Interesting to compare the look ahead to this game versus last week and that Ravens game. The Bills were looking so sharp after the Jacksonville win. And largely, I would say, of our conversations, the three of us, there was some uh-oh in the air with the Ravens matchup, just how the Bills might have been kind of ready to get exposed a little bit with their injuries on defense and, you know, style mismatch maybe or contrast. What is the Houston game in that sort of way for you here, Sal, with the three receivers, assuming Dell is healthy? I don't know, like that's kind of scary, but Houston today sounds a little bit like maybe we did last week with how the Bills play defense, and should the Texans need to run the ball in this game because that's maybe where the Bills are weaker, but it's also where the Texans have been weak. I don't know, like how does this opponent rate offense versus the Bills defense for you in sort of a style matchup?
I think it's a better matchup for the Bills than the Ravens were, because they're not going to bring in all this size and pound it right at a Bills, you know, front that is built more athleticism than it is size. They're not going to do that necessarily. They do have wideouts, obviously. They have guys they can spread the field with. I don't think the Bills ever are really concerned about that too much. Like, they do a good job of that. You know, when a team brings in a nice passing attack, like that's okay. Well, you know, we're good there. Now, granted, the safety situation is something to monitor, right? And, like, you know, making sure that you're not getting beat over the top. C.J. Stroud's a very accurate quarterback. He's a very good quarterback. He's pretty mobile. He's not a runner necessarily, but he's a mobile quarterback. He can move around. He can extend plays. That's always something, you know, it seems like it winds up hurting the Bills on critical downs especially. So I do think it's a better matchup for them from that standpoint. I also think something to monitor here is Joe Mixon's status. He's missed 2 days in a row now. So has Damian Pierce. Joe Mixon and Damian Pierce both have not practiced yet for the Houston Texans. So do they go with Cam Akers? Cam Akers is averaging a full yard less per carry than Joe Mixon is. You know, they're a much, I think, less of a threat.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pound the ball at the Bills with Cam Akers and they would be with Joe Mixon, who looked really, really good out of the gate for them, by the way. So I think that's something you have to, you know, consider. Running the ball, 4.19 yards a carry for the Houston Texans. They're not an overwhelming run team. They're going to run at you a little bit. I think they're just a really balanced attack, but I think the Bills would probably feel comfortable in, you know, yes, Nico Collins is a very, very good wide receiver. That's the guy I think you have to, all the attention's on Diggs this week for obvious reasons. Nico Collins is like emerging as one of the top wide receivers in the league. And I think that's the guy that you just have to have a plan for where he is always.
Within this, by the way, Ben Solak, Mina Kimes on her podcast pointed out, and he went into it a little bit, the Bills should want the Texans to feed Diggs. Sure. Mm-hmm. You know, and as opposed to either it's the running game, but also, you know, the big play threats the other guys present at this point. Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Bills and Texans Sunday at 1. I'm ready to get to Adams unless you got something else.
I'm good. Yep.
So what is your latest feeling, Sal, about, I guess, the likelihood of the Bills trading for Davante Adams? Is it non-zero for you? And maybe also we get into like his likelihood of being traded at all. Seems pretty high at this point. Let's start there.
It's non-zero for me. Like, I don't think it's a zero chance the Bills trade for him. I think there's pretty much zero chance it happens, like, pretty imminently.
Right.
If the Raiders want to make a deal very soon, which sounds like it could happen, but look, he's got a hamstring injury. People are going to be monitoring that. I don't think the Bills are just ready to go, okay, let's go, let's do this. That's not the play here for the Bills. I think the Bills want to see a little bit more about, you know, what happened Sunday night, carrying that a little bit more. Let's see where we're at. You know, if you're believing the reports that are out there, and I know you guys talked about, you know, how reports can also just surface because agents are like, yeah, throw my team out there, right? I mean, that can happen. We know that. I get it. But, you know, we don't have anybody also reporting that it's certainly not, you know, the Bills aren't interested at all, anything like that. So let's just assume that Brandon Bean is doing what a GM should do. He's doing his due diligence. He's making a phone call. He's asking, hey, what are you thinking here? Okay, we'll see where it goes. I think the Bills have really committed themselves to this philosophy and style, whether it's because of it's just super intentional or it's also due to circumstance, which Bulldog has brought up. Like that they're here now, and this is what they're doing. That's a major, major move. It's a major move both for the roster and the player. It's a major move financially, and it's a major move philosophically on how you want to operate. This team does not usually make moves under this regime like that. They give it time to say, is this what we really want to do? Let's kind of see where we're at. I just don't feel it's going to happen here on October 3rd or before week 5 or even before week 6. This is something to me that if the Bills are going to do it, it's probably closer to the trade deadline when they really feel, where are we? Let's really gauge the landscape of what's going on. And if the Raiders say, hey, no, we got to make a deal now, then it's probably like Shark Tank. Sorry, I'm out. That's just not what I'm interested in doing.
Yeah, the Bills are really not at a point yet, if they're even at one ever by then, mid-season,
right,
to take the L on this entire thing.
Right, the quarterback just was named Offensive Player of the Month in September.
Right.
Right, so, you know.
Imagine if he had Devonta. Yeah.
Right. Like, what, you know, I agree, Sal. I think I also think there's a non-zero chance that they would do it. But for me, there are parameters, and like these are mine that I hope would be the Bills. I'm not that worried about the asset, a second round pick, if that's the asking price, and like whatever the throw in is from a, you know, like a Saturday pick, you know, perspective to sweeten the pot or whatever that is. And I'm not worried about upsetting the plan and looking silly because we talked up everybody eats and we don't need an alpha dog number one guy or whatever. Because, you know, situations change. It's pro sports. You go, we got a chance to add this Hall of Fame player to our team. We're going to do it. Thanks. And everyone just stops, you know, being weirded out about it. But the parameters are this to me. Well, it's really one. No contract extension. And I don't know if that's a non-starter for Devonta Adams. And I don't know, you know, he doesn't have the power necessarily to make that happen. But if he wants a new contract and the Bills don't want to give him one, I doubt that they would make the trade. And I can't imagine the Bills wanting to give a 32-year-old wide receiver, as great as he's been, a market rate contract right now after just getting out from under a market rate contract with a 30-year-old receiver themselves.
If he wanted a new contract, I think he'd be hurting himself because he's due $35 million in a base salary next year.
Well, yeah, but the team, you know what I mean? There's no strings to that, though. The way I've been reading all this is an acquiring team could just cut him for nothing. Like, all of that is just, that's dressing on the original contract.
Yes.
So he would want some security, I might expect, and I don't want to give it to him. If he wants to play it like Diggs did going to Houston, tear up my deal, I'll be a free agent after the year, great, I'll come play for my supper. I'm here for that, but I do not think it would be smart at all to give him a new contract.
Oh, agreed. And listen, the Bills have done a lot of work here to have flexibility next year. 2025 is a big year for them. Next offseason is a big year for them to have some flexibility on the cap. That's why they did the things that they did this year. It's why they you know, released guys and pulled the Band-Aid off, so to speak, all at once to give themselves a little more flexibility. And look, I wonder, and I wouldn't doubt if Josh Allen's contract is addressed in some way in the offseason. You're going to have to do some things like that. So it's not like they have a ton of money, but they... something like that would hurt that. You don't want to do that. And, you know, he's going to be 33. Then next year would be in 2025, his season there. But if you look around the AFC, if the Bills, would I doubt it if Brandon Bean looks around and goes, hey, man, like, this is our division again to win. Like, we have a look at this. And look what's going on. Rashee Rice just went on IR. He might be out for the year. Isaiah Pacheco's out probably for the year. No Marquise Brown. Like, we have a chance at the one seed here. It's going to come down to the same teams it's been coming down to. And if we can add a player like that, maybe this is the year that we can actually make this happen. Let's strike. I, I would not doubt that there could be a thought like that going on. And then you start to talk about the financial parameters and what the compensation is from there. But I think it's got to have, like, to me, it's got to have a real certain set of circumstances that ultimately get him to, we're going to make a deal like this.
Right.
But I certainly think it could happen.
Sure.
Like, those circumstances could happen. It's just not very likely.
For all the words I just said, really, for me, it comes down to this. I would rent. I don't want to buy.
Mm-hmm. That's what he would be in a situation like that, unless, of course, right, the Bills can't trade for him on his existing contract anyway, guys, right? I mean, that's a non-starter. You just can't do it. He's due $13 million. Even after the trade deadline, he's still going to be due $8, $9 million. They don't have that. So they just simply cannot trade him on his current contract. Something would have to be done to his contract, mm-hmm. even if before him even going to the Bills.
It reminds me of the DeAndre Hopkins dalliance we had. And part of that conversation was, don't let him go to Kansas City, mm-hmm. which he didn't go to Kansas City. And I know they won anyway. He went to Tennessee. It so happens, not entirely a coincidence, your biggest rivals here probably are other teams who might have interest in him. And I don't know mm-hmm. if that's ever a good enough reason by itself mm-hmm. to make a move, but the Jets in your own division are the betting favorite. Kansas City might make some sense. I think Amari Cooper is maybe a better idea there, but there's Cooper right. to talk about also. The Ravens, the Steelers get mentioned. You know, you could end up having to beat this guy.
Yeah, those teams, a lot of them are in the same position as the Bills, too. Kansas City's got the same, a lot of financial restrictions mm-hmm. on
right.
what they can and can't do. And honestly, like, it would be really, really shocking to me if the Raiders said we're trading him to the Kansas City.
Same
Chiefs.
Here. I was waiting to say the same
right?
thing. Like, there's just, I know Al Davis is dead, but like, no way are they trading a player like that to the Chiefs.
No, I would think, I would hope that Mark Davis still has the wherewithal to say like that. That just can't happen here. Like, we can't trade him to the Kansas City Chiefs. I agree with you, Mike. Amari Cooper. Look, I think Amari Cooper could be a better idea from the Bills.
Yeah.
Maybe Davante Adams, given all the circumstances, right? Maybe he's the guy in the end. We'll see what happens with how all that shakes out a little bit here. DeAndre Hopkins could be back on the block,
and
too.
If folks don't know, Cooper's money is already taken care of. The Browns mm-hmm. turned his salary into a bonus that they already paid. So you're on the hook for like $900,000 on the cap with Amari Cooper, which
yeah.
is fantastic. You might have to pay more in an asset because of that, although the Browns have already done that. It's not like with the Raiders, you know, a way the Raiders can maybe get more in a trade is, like you were saying, Sal, like that contract, even without the baggage of the 2 years that could be walked away from, just for this year, teams don't have that cap room. They're going to ask the Raiders to eat that, or at least a chunk of it, and, yep. you know, that turns a third-round pick into a second or whatever. You know, it could just drive up their asking price.
No doubt. And, you know, Amari Cooper here is I heard you guys talking yesterday, and I agree with both of you, like, kind of a guy that you don't think about having the kind of career he's had, right? He's just really
yeah.
a little bit, even though it's in a way, it's been nondescript, but it's been really good.
Was it 7,000-yard seasons?
Yes.
Is that what we looked up?
It's pretty wild, right, to think about it. He's been really good in this league. I don't know, like, what the Bills' appetite is here to add someone of a caliber, and it sounds weird. Oh, well, you don't want a guy that's really good. Of course they do, but you know, you'd love to have people on your team that make you better. But I just think that, as you said, but it's a great way to put it. I mean, they just had their quarterback was named AFC Offensive Player of the Month, despite what happened Sunday night in Baltimore, right? It's kind of working. Really, it didn't work on Sunday.
Right.
It's kind of been working here for the first, you know, month of the season on how they wanted to go about it. And it's really interesting to me to think about if they would want to do something like that.
Sal, thanks. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right, guys, thanks.
That's our Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
What do you want to do about Davante Adams, if anything? We had a great call or two on Tuesday. I wasn't here yesterday, but the one guy's like, yeah, I want to trade for Davante Adams. I'm getting old. Of course I do. 803-0550 is the number. Yeah, the money. Yeah, it's just a draft pick. Ooh, who cares about all that? I don't. I'm not scoffing at that. I think there's an argument to be made for it. And I, by the way, and this can come up or not, I don't think the Raiders should care about whether Kansas City is their best offer. I don't think that should matter to them, but I know the history. Lines are open. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, back after the update here on WGR.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.